be used to calculate the abundance of neutralinos. Shortly after the Big Bang, the temperature was so blistering hot that even neutralinos were destroyed by collisions. But as the universe cooled, at a certain time the temperature dropped enough so that neutralinos could form without being destroyed. The abundance of neutralinos dates back to this early era. When we do this calculation, we find that the abundance of neutralinos is much larger than atoms, and in fact approximately corresponds to the actual abundance of dark matter today. Supersymmetric particles, therefore, can explain the reason why dark matter is overwhelmingly abundant throughout the universe. Sloan Sky Survey. Although many of the advances in the 21st century will be made in instrumentation involving satellites, this does not mean that research in earthbound optical and radio telescopes has been set aside. In fact, the impact of the digital revolution has changed the way optical and radio telescopes are utilized, making possible statistical analyses of hundreds of thousands of galaxies. Telescope technology is now having a sudden second lease on life as a result of this new technology. Historically, astronomers have fought over the limited amount of time they were permitted to use the world's biggest telescopes. They jealously guarded their precious time on these instruments and spent many hours toiling in cold, damp rooms throughout the night. Such an antiquated observation method was highly inefficient and often sparked bitter feuds among astronomers who felt slighted by the priesthood monopolizing time on the telescope. All this is changing with the coming of the Internet and high-speed computing. Today, many telescopes are fully automated and can be programmed thousands of miles away by astronomers located on different continents. The results of these massive star surveys can be digitized and then placed on the Internet, where powerful supercomputers can then analyze the data. One example of the power of this digital method is SETI at Home, a project based at the University of California at Berkeley to analyze signals for signs of extraterrestrial intelligence. The massive data from the Arecibo Radio Telescope in Puerto Rico is chopped up into tiny digital pieces and then sent via the Internet to PCs around the world, mainly to amateurs. A screensaver software program analyzes the data for intelligent signals when the PC is not in use. Using this method, the research group has constructed the largest computer network in the world, linking about 5 million PCs from all points of the globe. The most prominent example of today's digital exploration of the universe is the Sloan Sky Survey, which is the most ambitious survey of the night sky ever undertaken. Like the earlier Palomar Sky Survey, which used old-fashioned photographic plates stored in bulky volumes, the Sloan Sky Survey will create an accurate map of the celestial objects in the sky. The survey has constructed three-dimensional maps of distant galaxies in five colors, including the redshift of over a million galaxies. The output of the Sloan Sky Survey is a map of the large-scale structure of the universe several hundred times larger than previous efforts. It will map in exquisite detail one quarter of the entire sky and determine the position and brightness of 100 million celestial objects. It will also determine the distance to more than a million galaxies and about 100,000 quasars. The total information generated by the survey will be 15 terabytes, a trillion bytes, which rivals the information stored within the Library of Congress. The heart of the Sloan Survey is a 2.5-meter telescope based in southern New Mexico, containing one of the most advanced cameras ever produced. It contains 30 delicate electronic light sensors, called CCDs, charge-coupled devices, each 2 inches square, sealed in a vacuum. Each sensor, which is cooled down to negative 80 degrees Celsius by liquid nitrogen, contains 4 million picture elements. All the light collected by the telescope can therefore be instantly digitized by the CCDs and then fed directly into a computer for processing. For less than $20 million, the survey creates a stunning picture of the universe at a cost of a hundredth of the Hubble Space Telescope. The survey then puts some of this digitized data on the Internet, where astronomers all over the world can pore over it. In this way, we can also harness the intellectual potential of the world's scientists. In the past, all too often, scientists in the Third World were unable to get access to the latest telescopic data and the latest journals. This was a tremendous waste of scientific talent. Now, because of the Internet, they can download the data from sky surveys, read articles as they appear on the Internet, and also publish articles on the web with the speed of light. The Sloan Survey is already changing the way astronomy is conducted, with new results based on analyses of hundreds of thousands of galaxies, which would have been prohibitive just a few years ago. For example, in May 2003, a team of scientists from Spain, Germany, and the United States announced that they had analyzed 250,000 galaxies for evidence of dark matter. Out of this huge number, they focused on 3,000 galaxies with star clusters orbiting around them. By using Newton's laws of motion to analyze the motion of these satellites, they calculated the amount of dark matter that must surround the central galaxy. Already, these scientists have ruled out a rival theory. An alternative theory, first proposed in 1983, tried to explain the anomalous orbits of stars in the galaxies by modifying Newton's laws themselves. Perhaps dark matter did not really exist at all, but was due to an error within Newton's laws. The survey data cast doubt on this theory. In July 2003, another team of scientists from Germany and the United States announced that they had analyzed 120,000 nearby galaxies using the Sloan Survey to unravel the relationship between galaxies and the black holes inside them. The question is, which came first, the black hole or the galaxy that harbors them? The result of this investigation indicates that galaxy and black hole formation are intimately tied together, and that they probably were formed together. It showed that of the 120,000 galaxies analyzed in the survey, fully 20,000 of them contain black holes that are still growing, unlike the black hole in the Milky Way galaxy, which seems to be quiescent. The results show that galaxies containing black holes that are still growing in size are much larger than the Milky Way galaxy, and that they grow by swallowing up relatively cold gas from the galaxy. Compensating for thermal fluctuations. Yet another way that optical telescopes have been revitalized is through lasers to compensate for the distortion of the atmosphere. Stars do not twinkle because they vibrate. Stars twinkle mainly because of tiny thermal fluctuations in the atmosphere. This means that in outer space, far from the atmosphere, the stars glare down on our astronauts continuously. Although this twinkling gives much of the beauty of the night sky, to an astronomer it is a nightmare, resulting in blurry pictures of celestial bodies. As a child, I remember staring at the fuzzy pictures of the planet Mars, wishing there was some way to obtain crystal-clear pictures of the red planet. If only the disturbances from the atmosphere could be eliminated by rearranging the light beams, I thought, maybe the secret of extraterrestrial life could be solved. One way to compensate for this blurriness is to use lasers and high-speed computers to subtract out the distortion. This method uses adaptive optics, pioneered by a classmate of mine from Harvard, Claire Max of the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory, and others, using the huge W.M. Keck telescope in Hawaii, the largest in the world, and also the smaller 3-meter Shane telescope at the Lick Observatory in California. For example, by shooting a laser beam into outer space, one can measure tiny temperature fluctuations in the atmosphere. This information is analyzed by computer, which then makes tiny adjustments in the mirror of a telescope which compensate for the distortion of starlight. In this way, one can approximately subtract out the disturbance from the atmosphere. This method was successfully tested in 1996, and since then has produced crystal-sharp pictures of planets, stars, and galaxies. The system fires light from a tunable dye laser with 18 watts of power into the sky. The laser is attached to the 3-meter telescope, whose deformable mirrors are adjusted to make up for the atmospheric distortion. The image itself is caught on a CCD camera and digitalized. With a modest budget, this system has obtained pictures almost comparable to the Hubble Space Telescope. One can see fine details in the outer planets and even peer into the heart of a quasar using this method, which breathes new life into optical telescopes. This method has also increased the resolution of the Keck telescope by a factor of 10. The Keck Observatory, located at the summit of Hawaii's dormant volcano Mauna Kea, almost 14,000 feet above sea level, consists of twin telescopes that weigh 270 tons each. Each mirror, measuring 10 meters, 394 inches across, is composed of 36 hexagonal pieces, each of which can be independently manipulated by computer. In 1999, an adaptive optic system was installed into Keck 2, consisting of a small, deformable mirror that can change shape 670 times per second. Already, this system has captured the image of stars orbiting around the black hole at the center of our Milky Way, the surface of Neptune and Titan, a moon of Saturn, and even an extrasolar planet which eclipsed the mother star 153 light-years from Earth. Light from the star HD209458 dimmed exactly as predicted as the planet moved in front of the star. Lashing radio telescopes together. Radio telescopes have also been revitalized by the computer revolution. In the past, radio telescopes were limited by the size of their dish. The larger the dish, the more radio signals could be gathered from space and analyzed. However, the larger the dish, the more expensive it becomes. One way to overcome this problem is to lash several dishes together to mimic the radio gathering capability of a super radio telescope. The largest radio telescope that can be lashed together on Earth is the size of Earth itself. Previous efforts to lash together radio telescopes in Germany, Italy, and the United States proved partially successful. One problem with this method is that signals from all the various radio telescopes must be combined precisely and then fed into a computer. In the past, this was prohibitively difficult. However, with the coming of the Internet and cheap, high-speed computers, costs have dropped considerably. Today, creating radio telescopes with the effective size of the planet Earth is no longer a fantasy. In the United States, the most advanced device employing this interference technology is the VLBA, Very Long Baseline Array, which is a collection of 10 radio antennas located at different sites, including New Mexico, Arizona, New Hampshire, Washington, Texas, the Virgin Islands, and Hawaii. Each VLBA station contains a huge 82-foot diameter dish which weighs 240 tons and stands as tall as a 10-story building. Radio signals are carefully recorded at each site on tape, which is then shipped to the Socorro Operations Center, New Mexico, where they are correlated and analyzed. The system went online in 1993 at a cost of $85 million. Correlating the data from these 10 sites creates an effective giant radio telescope that is 5,000 miles wide and can produce some of the sharpest images on Earth. It is equivalent to standing in New York City and reading a newspaper in Los Angeles. Already, the VLBA has produced movies of cosmic jets and supernova explosions, and the most accurate distance measurement ever made of an object outside the Milky Way galaxy. In the future, even optical telescopes may use the power of interferometry, although this is quite difficult because of the short wavelength of light. There is a plan to bring the optical data from the two telescopes at the Keck Observatory in Hawaii and interfere them, essentially creating a giant telescope much larger than either one. Measuring the 11th dimension. In addition to the search for dark matter and black holes, what is most intriguing to physicists is the search for higher dimensions of space and time. One of the more ambitious attempts to verify the existence of a nearby universe was done at the University of Colorado at Boulder. Scientists there tried to measure deviations from Newton's famous inverse square law. According to Newton's theory of gravity, the force of attraction between any two bodies diminishes with the square of the distance separating them. If you double the distance from Earth to the Sun, then the force of gravity goes downward by 2 squared, or 4. This, in turn, measures the dimensionality of space. So far, Newton's law of gravity holds at cosmological distances involving large clusters of galaxies, but no one has adequately tested his law of gravity down to tiny length scales because it was prohibitively difficult. Because gravity is such a weak force, even the tiniest disturbance can destroy the experiment. Even passing trucks create vibrations large enough to nullify experiments trying to measure the gravity between two small objects. The physicists in Colorado built a delicate instrument called a high-frequency resonator that was able to test the law of gravity down to a tenth of a millimeter, the first time this had ever been done on such a tiny scale. The experiment consisted of two very thin tungsten reeds suspended in a vacuum. One of the reeds vibrated at a frequency of 1,000 cycles per second, looking somewhat like a vibrating diving board. Physicists then looked for any vibrations that were transmitted across the vacuum to the second reed. The apparatus was so sensitive that it could detect motion in the second reed caused by a force of a billionth of the weight of a grain of sand. If there was a deviation in Newton's law of gravity, then there should have been slight disturbances recorded in the second reed. However, after analyzing distances down to 108 millionths of a meter, the physicists found no such deviation. "So far, Newton is holding his ground," said C.D. Hoyle of the University of Trento in Italy, who analyzed the experiment for Nature magazine. This result was negative, but this has only whetted the appetite of other physicists who want to test deviations to Newton's law down to the microscopic level. Yet another experiment is being planned at Purdue University. Physicists there want to measure tiny deviations in Newton's gravity not at the millimeter level, but at the atomic level. They plan to do this by using nanotechnology to measure the difference between nickel-58 and nickel-64. These two isotopes have identical electrical and chemical properties, but one isotope has 6 more neutrons than the other. In principle, the only difference between these isotopes is their weight. These scientists envision creating a Casimir device consisting of 2 sets of neutral plates made out of the 2 isotopes. Normally, when these plates are held closely together, nothing happens because they have no charge. But if they are brought extremely close to each other, the Casimir effect takes place, and the 2 plates are attracted slightly, an effect that has been measured in the laboratory. But because each set of parallel plates is made out of different isotopes of nickel, they will be attracted slightly differently, depending on their gravity. In order to maximize the Casimir effect, the plates have to be brought extremely close together. The effect is proportional to the inverse fourth power of the separation distance. Hence, the effect grows rapidly as the plates are brought together. The Purdue physicists will use nanotechnology to make plates separated by atomic distances. They will use state-of-the-art microelectromechanical torsion oscillators to measure tiny oscillations in the plates. Any difference between the nickel-58 and nickel-64 plates can then be attributed to gravity. In this way, they hope to measure deviations to Newton's laws of motion down to atomic distances. If they find a deviation from Newton's famed inverse square law with this ingenious device, it may signal the presence of a higher dimensional universe separated from our universe by the size of an atom. Large Hadron Collider. But the device that may decisively settle many of these questions is the LHC, Large Hadron Collider, in Geneva, Switzerland, at the famed CERN Nuclear Laboratory. Unlike previous experiments on strange forms of matter that naturally occur in our world, the LHC might have enough energy to create them directly in the laboratory. The LHC will be able to probe tiny distances, down to 10 to the negative 19th power meters, or 10,000 times smaller than a proton, and create temperatures not seen since the Big Bang. Physicists are sure that nature has new tricks up her sleeve that must be revealed in those collisions, perhaps an exotic particle known as the Higgs boson, perhaps evidence of a miraculous effect called supersymmetry, or perhaps something unexpected that will turn theoretical particle physics on its head, writes Chris Llewellyn Smith, former Director General of CERN and now President of the University College in London. Already, CERN has 7,000 users of its equipment, which amounts to more than half of all the experimental particle physicists on the planet, and many of them will be directly involved in the LHC experiments. The LHC is a powerful circular machine, 27 kilometers in diameter, large enough to completely encircle many cities around the world. Its tunnel is so long that it actually straddles the French-Swiss border. The LHC is so expensive that it has taken a consortium of several European nations to build it. Powerful magnets arranged along the circular tubing will force a beam of protons to circulate at ever-increasing energies until they reach about 14 trillion electron volts. The machine consists of a large circular vacuum chamber with huge magnets placed strategically along its length to bend the powerful beam into a circle. As the particles circulate in the tubing, energy is injected into the chamber, increasing the velocity of the protons. When the beam finally hits a target, it releases a titanic burst of radiation. Fragments created by this collision are then photographed by batteries of detectors to look for evidence of new, exotic subatomic particles. The LHC is truly a mammoth machine. While LIGO and LISA push the envelope in terms of sensitivity, the LHC is the ultimate in sheer brute strength. Its powerful magnets, which bend the beam of protons into a graceful arc, generate a field of 8.3 teslas, which is 160,000 times greater than Earth's magnetic field. To generate such monstrous magnetic fields, physicists ram 12,000 amps of electrical current down a series of coils, which have to be cooled down to negative 271 degrees Celsius, where the coils lose all resistance and become superconducting. In all, it has 1,232 15-meter-long magnets, which are placed along 85% of the entire circumference of the machine. In the tunnel, protons are accelerated to 99.999999% of the speed of light until they hit a target located at four places around the tube, thereby creating billions of collisions each second. Huge detectors are placed there, the largest is the size of a six-story building, to analyze the debris and hunt for elusive subatomic particles. As Smith mentioned earlier, one of the goals of the LHC is to find the elusive Higgs boson, which is the last piece of the Standard Model that has still eluded capture. It is important because this particle is responsible for spontaneous symmetry breaking in particle theories and gives rise to the masses of the quantum world. Estimates of the mass of the Higgs boson place it somewhere between 115 and 200 billion electron volts. The proton, by contrast, weighs about 1 billion electron volts. The Tevatron, a much smaller machine located at Fermi Lab outside Chicago, may actually be the first accelerator to bag the elusive Higgs boson, if the particle's mass is not too heavy. In principle, the Tevatron may produce up to 10,000 Higgs bosons if it operates as planned. The LHC, however, will generate particles with 7 times more energy. With 14 trillion electron volts to play with, the LHC can conceivably become a factory for Higgs bosons, creating millions of them in its proton collisions. Another goal of the LHC is to create conditions not seen since the Big Bang itself. In particular, physicists believe that the Big Bang originally consisted of a loose collection of extremely hot quarks and gluons, called a quark-gluon plasma. The LHC will be able to produce this kind of quark-gluon plasma, which dominated the universe in the first 10 microseconds of its existence. In the LHC, one can collide nuclei of lead with an energy of 1.1 trillion electron volts. With such a colossal collision, the 400 protons and neutrons can melt and free the quarks into this hot plasma. In this way, cosmology may gradually become less an observational science and more an experimental science, with precise experiments on quark-gluon plasmas done right in the laboratory. There is also the hope that the LHC might find mini black holes among the debris created by smashing protons together at fantastic energy, as mentioned in Chapter 7. Normally, the creation of quantum black holes should take place at the Planck energy, which is a quadrillion times beyond the energy of the LHC. But if a parallel universe exists within a millimeter of our universe, this reduces the energy at which quantum gravitational effects become measurable, putting mini black holes within the reach of the LHC. And last, there is still the hope that the LHC might be able to find evidence of supersymmetry, which would be a historic breakthrough in particle physics. These particles are believed to be partners of the ordinary particles we see in nature. Although string theory and supersymmetry predict that each subatomic particle has a twin with differing spin, supersymmetry has never been observed in nature, probably because our machines are not powerful enough to detect it. The existence of superparticles would help to answer 2 nagging questions. First, is string theory correct? Although it is exceedingly difficult to detect strings directly, it may be possible to detect the lower octaves or resonances of string theory. If particles are discovered, it would go a long way toward giving string theory experimental justification, although this would still not be direct proof of its correctness. Second, it would give perhaps the most plausible candidate for dark matter. If dark matter consists of subatomic particles, they must be stable and neutral in charge, otherwise they would be visible, and they must interact gravitationally. All 3 properties can be found among the particles predicted by string theory. The LHC, which is the most powerful particle accelerator, is actually a second choice for most physicists. Back in the 1980s, President Ronald Reagan approved the Superconducting Supercollider, SSC, a monstrous machine 50 miles in circumference which was to have been built outside Dallas, Texas. It would have dwarfed the LHC. While the LHC is capable of producing particle collisions with 14 trillion electron volts of energy, the SSC was designed to produce collisions with 40 trillion electron volts. The project was initially approved, but in the final days of hearings, the U.S. Congress abruptly canceled the project. It was a tremendous blow to high-energy physics and set the field back for an entire generation. Primarily, the debate was about the $11 billion cost of the machine and greater scientific priorities. The scientific community itself was badly split on the SSC, with some physicists claiming that the SSC might drain funds from their own research. The controversy grew so heated that even the New York Times wrote a critical editorial about the dangers that big science would smother small science. These arguments were misleading, since the SSC budget came out of a different source than the budget for small science. The real competitor for funds was the space station, which many scientists feel is a true waste of money. But in retrospect, the controversy was also about learning to speak to the public in language they can understand. In some sense, the physics world was used to having its monster atom smashers approved by Congress because the Russians were building them as well. The Russians, in fact, were building their UNK accelerator to compete against the SSC. National prestige and honor were at stake. But the Soviet Union broke apart. Their machine was canceled, and the wind gradually went out of the sails of the SSC program. Tabletop accelerators. With the LHC, physicists are gradually approaching the upper limit of energy attainable with the present generation of accelerators, which now dwarf many modern cities and cost tens of billions of dollars. They are so huge that only large consortiums of nations can afford them. New ideas and principles are necessary if we are to push the barriers facing conventional accelerators. The holy grail for particle physicists is to create a tabletop accelerator that can create beams with billions of electron volts of energy at a fraction of the size and cost of conventional accelerators. To understand the problem, imagine a relay race where the runners are distributed around a very large circular racetrack. The runners exchange a baton as they race around the track. Now imagine that every time the baton is passed from one runner to another, the runners get an extra burst of energy, so they run successively faster along the track. This is similar to a particle accelerator, where the baton consists of a beam of subatomic particles moving around the circular track. Every time the beam passes from one runner to another, the beam receives an injection of radio frequency, RF, energy, accelerating it to faster and faster velocities. This is how particle accelerators have been built for the past half century. The problem with conventional particle accelerators is that we are hitting the limit of RF energy that can be used to drive the accelerator. To solve this vexing problem, scientists are experimenting with radically different ways of pumping energy into the beam, such as with powerful laser beams, which are growing exponentially in power. One advantage of laser light is that it is coherent. That is, all the waves of light are vibrating in precise unison, making it possible to create enormously powerful beams. Today, laser beams can generate bursts of energy carrying trillions of watts, terawatts of power, for a brief period of time. By contrast, a nuclear power plant can generate only a paltry billion watts of power, but at a steady rate. Lasers that generate up to 1,000 trillion watts, a quadrillion watts, or a petawatt, are now becoming available. Laser accelerators work by the following principle. Laser light is hot enough to create a gas of plasma, a collection of ionized atoms, which then moves in wave-like oscillations at high velocities, like a tidal wave. Then, a beam of subatomic particles surfs in the wake created by this wave of plasma. By injecting more laser energy, the plasma wave travels at faster velocity, boosting the energy of the particle beam surfing on it. Recently, by blasting a 50-terawatt laser at a solid target, the scientists at the Rutherford Appleton Laboratory in England produced a beam of protons emerging from the target carrying up to 400 million electron volts, MeV, of energy in a collimated beam. At École Polytechnique in Paris, physicists have accelerated electrons to 200 MeV over a distance of a millimeter. The laser accelerators created so far have been tiny and not very powerful. But assume for a moment that this accelerator could be scaled up so that it operates not just over a millimeter, but over a full meter. Then it would be able to accelerate electrons to 200 giga electron volts over a distance of a meter, fulfilling the goal of a tabletop accelerator. Another milestone was reached in 2001 when the physicists at SLAC, Stanford Linear Accelerator Center, were able to accelerate electrons over a distance of 1.4 meters. Instead of using a laser beam, they created a plasma wave by injecting a beam of charged particles. Although the energy they attained was low, it demonstrated that plasma waves can accelerate particles over distances of a meter. Progress in this promising area of research is extremely rapid. The energy attained by these accelerators is growing by a factor of 10 every 5 years. At this rate, a prototype tabletop accelerator may be within reach. If successful, it may make the LHC look like the last of the dinosaurs. Although promising, there are, of course, still many hurdles facing such a tabletop accelerator. Like a surfer who wipes out riding a treacherous ocean wave, maintaining the beam so that it properly rides the plasma wave is difficult. Problems include focusing the beam and maintaining its stability and intensity. But none of these problems seems insurmountable. The future. There are some long shots in proving string theory. Edward Witten holds out the hope that, at the instant of the Big Bang, the universe expanded so rapidly that maybe a string was expanded along with it, leaving a huge string of astronomical proportions drifting in space. He muses, "Although somewhat fanciful, this is my favorite scenario for confirming string theory, as nothing would settle the issue quite as dramatically as seeing a string in a telescope." Brian Greene lists 5 possible examples of experimental data that could confirm string theory, or at least give it credibility. 1. The tiny mass of the elusive, ghost-like neutrino could be experimentally determined, and string theory might explain it. 2. Small violations of the standard model could be found that violate point particle physics, such as the decays of certain subatomic particles. 3. New long-range forces, other than gravity and electromagnetism, could be found experimentally that would signal a certain choice of a Calabi-Yau manifold. 4. Dark matter particles could be found in the laboratory and compared to predictions of string theory. 5. String theory might be able to calculate the amount of dark energy in the universe. My own view is that verification of string theory might come entirely from pure mathematics, rather than from experiment. Since string theory is supposed to be a theory of everything, it should be a theory of everyday energies, as well as cosmic ones. Thus, if we can finally solve the theory completely, we should be able to calculate the properties of ordinary objects, not just exotic ones found in outer space. For example, if string theory can calculate the masses of the proton, neutron, and electron from first principles, this would be an accomplishment of first magnitude. In all models of physics, except string theory, the masses of these familiar particles are put in by hand. We do not need an LHC, in some sense, to verify the theory, since we already know the masses of scores of subatomic particles, all of which should be determined by string theory with no adjustable parameters. As Einstein said, "I am convinced that we can discover by means of purely mathematical construction the concepts and the laws which furnish the key to the understanding of natural phenomena. Experience may suggest the appropriate mathematical concepts, but they most certainly cannot be deduced from it. In a certain sense, therefore, I hold it true that pure thought can grasp reality as the ancients dreamed. If true, then perhaps M-theory, or whatever theory finally leads us to a quantum theory of gravity, will make possible the final journey for all intelligent life in the universe, the escape from our dying universe, trillions upon trillions of years from now, to a new home. Part 3. Escape into Hyperspace. Chapter 10. The End of Everything. Consider the view now held by most physicists, namely that the Sun, with all the planets, will in time grow too cold for life, unless indeed some great body dashes into the Sun and thus gives it fresh life. Believing, as I do, that man in the distant future will be a far more perfect creature than he now is, it is an intolerable thought that he and all other sentient beings are doomed to complete annihilation after such long-continued slow progress. Charles Darwin. According to Norse legend, the final day of reckoning, or Ragnarok, the twilight of the gods, will be accompanied by cataclysmic upheavals. Midgard, Middle Earth, as well as the heavens, will be caught in the vice-like grip of a bone-chilling frost. Piercing winds, blinding blizzards, ruinous earthquakes, and famine will stalk the land, as men and women perish helplessly in great numbers. 3 such winters will paralyze the earth without any relief, while the ravenous wolves eat up the sun and the moon, plunging the world into total darkness. The stars in the heaven will fall, the earth will tremble, and the mountains will disintegrate. Monsters will break free as the god of chaos, Loki, escapes, spreading war, confusion, and discord across the bleak land. Odin, the father of the gods, will assemble his brave warriors for the last time in Valhalla for the final conflict. Eventually, as the gods die one by one, the evil god Surtur will breathe fire and brimstone, igniting a gigantic inferno that will engulf both heaven and earth. As the entire universe is plunged into flames, the earth sinks into the oceans, and time itself stops. But out of the great ash, a new beginning stirs. A new earth, unlike the old, gradually rises out of the sea, as new fruits and exotic plants spring forth copiously from the fertile soil, giving birth to a new race of humans. The Viking legend of a gigantic frieze, followed by flames and a final battle, presents a grim tale of the end of the world. In mythologies around the world, similar themes can be found. The end of the world is accompanied by great climactic catastrophes, usually a great fire, earthquakes, or a blizzard, followed by the final battle between good and evil. But there is also a message of hope. Out of the ashes comes renewal. Scientists, facing the cold laws of physics, must now confront similar themes. Hard data, rather than mythology whispered around campfires, dictates how scientists view the final end of the universe. But similar themes may prevail in the scientific world. Among the solutions of Einstein's equations, we also see possible futures involving freezing cold, fire, catastrophe, and an end to the universe. But will there be a final rebirth? According to the picture emerging from the WMAP satellite, a mysterious anti-gravity force is accelerating the expansion of the universe. If it continues for billions or trillions of years, the universe will inevitably reach a big freeze similar to the blizzard foretelling the twilight of the gods, ending all life as we know it. This anti-gravity force pushing the universe apart is proportional to the volume of the universe. Thus, the larger the universe becomes, the more anti-gravity there is to push the galaxies apart, which in turn increases the volume of the universe. This vicious cycle repeats itself endlessly until the universe enters a runaway mode and grows exponentially fast. Eventually, this will mean that 36